do you trust Brock Purdy?
Because, of course I do.
In his first 25 career starts, he's got the highest passer rating for a quarterback through his first 25 career starts since 1970. Look at this list. Number 5, Deshaun Watson. Number 4, Dan Marino.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. You can't just gossip. Deshaun Watson had the highest in 25 starts?
No. That was number 5.
That's what I'm saying. Like, wow. That's...
Yeah, top 5. Wow. He was really good.
No,
he
I
was
know.
Good. We forget. I mean, we forget.
Watson?
Things have gone sideways for him, okay. No doubt.
Number 4?
Dan Marino.
Dan Marino. Well, that's a name.
Yeah, that is a name.
Okay.
Number 3, Kurt Warner. 106.2.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
Number 2, Patrick Mahomes.
Wow.
112.5. And number 1, Brock Purdy.
Wow.
Now, how about this? Highest completion percentage through the first 25 career starts in franchise history. Number 5, Alex Smith. Number 4, Colin Kaepernick. Number 3, Jeff Garcia. Number 2, Joe Montana. Number 1, Brock Purdy. And he's number 1 by a long shot. Montana had a 63% completion percentage. Now the rules were different.
Yeah,
we understand all that. Yeah, but Brock Purdy started at 69%. He's completed 69% of his passes through the first 25 starts of his career. Most passing touchdowns in franchise history through his first 25 career starts. Well, number 5 is Steve Spurrier, the old ball coach of Florida.
Number 1 overall pick.
Heisman Trophy winner. Number 4, Joe Montana. Number 3, Colin Kaepernick. Number 2, Jeff Garcia. Number 1, Brock Purdy with 47 touchdown passes. Number 2, Jeff Garcia had 41. Now, highest passer rating through the quarterback's first 25 starts is Brock Purdy, and it's not even close. Basically, what I'm saying is that this guy is rewriting the record book with the San Francisco 49ers, a place where John Brody and Joe Montana and Steve Young and Garcia and all these guys play quarterback. Brock Purdy is excelling at an unbelievable level. And that makes me, as we talk about Fred Warner last segment and discuss him and being the defensive captain, well, we know we've got a quarterback. Yeah. And there's no doubts about it. This guy's a pretty damn good quarterback in Brock Purdy.
It's not the same regarding all the numbers, because those numbers you cited, they all pass the eyeball test, right? Which is the number one thing. Like, he passes the eyeball test. But, like, and I know, like, for the 3-point shots now, you see all the numbers that are being thrown up, and it kind of dilutes how great a Reggie Miller was or a Larry Bird, because they just didn't shoot the volume that these guys shoot now, right? That doesn't mean those guys weren't great. It's comparative to their eras. So all those things that you reference, like, I know that the stats are going to put him at the top. I would just say look amongst his contemporaries and look around the league and look at quarterback play and look where it's going, okay? And you tell me, this guy's an upper echelon quarterback.
Yep.
There's just no other way around it. Is he the best player in the league? No, but he's closer to that than he is in the middle, that's for sure. And I look at the thing that you didn't cite, which is, to me, using the legs on third down to be able to move the chains, whether it's running for first downs, whether it's scrambling or rolling left or right to get first down throws on, like, broken plays, or creating an angle to get a throw to a specific route that was called in the huddle. He just does a great job of keeping this team on schedule. To me, and I was looking into the advanced numbers, to me, the area where they're really excelling as a team is throwing on second and short.
Yeah.
Second and short, the whole playbook opens up, and this is by design, but also Brock Purdy's gunslinger mentality of throwing it deep. They're crushing it on second and short right now in terms of passing.
It's a great down to throw on, because you know you have third down in your back pocket. If you don't take a sack, you're going to face a third and short, even if it's an incomplete pass. Just don't want to take a sack, have a penalty, intentional grounding or whatnot. But they have been aggressive. But at the same time, the numbers cite that they've been basically like this for the last 2 seasons. And that's a good sign. That is a very good sign. They still want to get to the 30 carries. But the leash is off of Brock Purdy in terms of where he can throw the football. Pardon me. And he's throwing deep down the field. He's throwing down the field. He's taking shots. He's stretching defense. So that's the evolution, too, where a defense knows, man, we can't just guard the first 15 yards or within this 15-yard box. We got to guard the entire field, sideline to sideline, deep down the field. So Brock Purdy's playing at an excellent level. That right there throughout the last 2 weeks, I know they lost last week, but that calms the waters when you know your quarterback is going to keep you in the game or is going to put you in a position to win, and he's going to make valuable plays for your football team. That calms everything for me.
After seeing what we've seen through the first 4 or 5 weeks, it does make you kind of think about the allocation of money at wide receiver going forward? Because Juwan Jennings has been so good. I love the three wide receiver sets, and I know because you got IU, because you got Debo back, and Jennings, the first play of the game, you know, Mason was on the sidelines, and they threw a little toss to Debo Samuel because they put Jennings and IU out there. I just need to find ways to get Jennings on the field. Right now, Jennings is a winning player. I'm not saying the other guys aren't. It's just I got to be creative. And so these three wide receiver sets are, I think, dynamic for them right now. And I did not think that that was going to be an element heading into the year. And seeing Juwan Jennings and how physical he is and the big body that is just so unique to the other two wide receivers that they have, and even Cowings and Pearsall. Like, I gotta continue to find ways to get him out there. Also, if teams are going to play man-to-man, he gives me a guy that can win a one-on-one matchup. Even if I'm like, if I'm Jennings and I'm being clouded by someone, I know as Brock Purdy, I could throw the ball his way because his catch radius is really good with a guy draped on him. The other element of going when teams go man, because that's what a lot of the New England did. They went man on him. Purdy has to run. He's got to be willing to gash them via the run, and he did it a couple of times yesterday in specific spots where it's like, all right, you're going to man us up across the board, and we're going to run these deep routes. I've got to be the beater on being able to scramble outside of the pocket and pick up first downs, and he's shown that propensity.
Well, sticking on Jennings for a second, you see it in Buffalo where Josh Allen's throwing to Keon Coleman, and he's just getting in position, being a big body wide receiver. And it got me to think, like, boy, Anquan Boldin was like that, but he wasn't as tall as Juwan Jennings. Then the 49ers haven't had a guy like this in a very long time where you can't throw the ball in one-on-one situations and say, hey, Juwan Jennings, go make a play. And his ability to go make a play, his confidence is through the roof right now. Kyle Shanahan mentioned after the game, but he's always had the confidence. But being a big body wide receiver who could high point the football, who's going deep down the field and positioning himself very well like a power forward, grabbing a rebound off the boards, off the glass. Juwan Jennings could do that. And so now you have that element, you know, that element of having a 6'3 guy, 215, 220, who's nasty, who's physical. That gets me excited about Ricky Pearsall, because now if you could get a quick, a guy who's great quick area or short area quickness and in intermediate, in a, you know, the 4 to 5 yard route tree where you can run a quick out, you can run a quick dig, you can run a quick slant. Now you get Pearsall in here. I'm very eager to see what Pearsall is because now I got this element of Juwan Jennings. I have Brandon Ayuk running routes. Debo Samuel is just a playmaker. Boy, they've got weapons, man. They've got weapons. And I think this offense is slowly starting to crank up, man. And so, yeah, Juwan Jennings, I think this guy coming along here, getting the 88 yards yesterday, they just haven't had this in a while.
Did you think they were trying to force some stuff, Brock and Kyle, to Ayuk yesterday?
No, I don't. I don't.
You think
I
thought it was all natural?
I think it was all natural. So I was listening to Kyle last week, because obviously we're going to get to Brandon Ayuk. And when people say 2 for 48, they're going to say, why'd you pay up $30 million? He only had 2 for 48. Well, it seemed like they were spreading the ball all around. Juwan Jennings had the most targets with 6. Brandon Ayuk and Debo Samuel have 5 targets. Kittle have 4 targets. Mason had 3. Colley had 2. Juszczyk had 1. So nobody was force-fed necessarily yesterday. Kyle mentioned last week that he believed Ayuk had his best game against Minnesota. Now, Tarnick and I were like, huh? What is he talking about? But this is why the coaches know a lot. They watch the film over and over and over again. They got data that we're not privy to. And he mentioned how Brock, yeah, Brandon Ayuk broke open that Minnesota game. They didn't hit him. He was missed. The quarterback didn't see him. And then Kyle mentioned that, look, we're not going to force feed anybody. We just want to hit the open man. Our offense isn't designed to say, hey, give this guy 12 targets, give this guy 10 targets, give this guy 8 targets. Our offense is designed to hit the open man. Okay, that's fair. But if that's the case, and your money allocation at the wide receiver position, and you have a quarterback in Brock Purdy, I don't know. But I think Brandon Ayuk's going to come along here. It's just a very interesting dynamic in a way, a very different offensive philosophy that Kyle Shanahan. Because, like, you look at McVay and Puka and Cooper Kupp, it seems like they get force fed, right? They're going to get their targets no matter what.
But that's that offense.
That's that offense.
Which, I mean, look. We're nitpicking here in a big win, but like the reality is, and we were talking about it all off season, it's like there is no number one in Kyle's system. If we're going to run Kyle's system, and that's a system, the number one receiver is the open guy on a given play, whether that's tight end, running back, whether that's wide receiver, whatever. It's not smart business to pay $60 million to two wide receivers. Yep. But essentially, Kyle operates with Debo as his one. That's yep. the way he views it. And so I just think it's going to be an uphill battle for Brandon Ayuk every single week in a lot of fans' minds yeah. to justify the money, fair right. or not. I just think it's going to be really difficult for him to come out because they never really target him like 12, 13. Like, it's just not going to happen. It's not what they do. You know, like one of my bugaboos, and they had a third down situation, and they showed it later in the game where they alley-ooped it to George Kittle. But like they have red zone issues right now, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that we all can acknowledge when you play Cardinals, the Seahawks, the Cowboys, and the Chiefs in the coming 4 weeks, if you stall out and continue to kick field goals in the red zone, you're probably not going to win a lot of those games. One of the things that they can do is split George Kittle out wide, put everyone else on the other side, and operate like he's Antonio Gates, Mike Evans, Gronkowski. He's a 6'4", 6'5 guy who is a matchup nightmare. You saw him high point a ball in the red zone yesterday. I don't for the life of me understand why they don't do matchups in the red zone. You see a lot of scheme and they do a lot of rollouts right. and they try to do misdirection and maybe hide things. And it works when you have Christian McCaffrey. But when you don't have Christian McCaffrey, to me, you have to work the matchups a little more in the red zone. And that's the one area, if I'm really like going to scrutinize, it's like you saw Kittle high point the ball. He can do that. And I didn't even think that was a really right. well-designed play or anything. He just made a great play, one of the best plays of his career. Roll him out to the left, have him on one side, everybody else on the other, and I'm either going to run a slant against a smaller guy and I'm going to box him out, or I'm going to throw it up to him and he's just going to jump over somebody. Kittle is the guy, to me, that is a matchup nightmare. Jennings is another guy that I think you can use in the red zone.
Yeah,
I don't think Ayuk is going to be the guy for those situations, but you saw in the play action play, he can gash it down the field.
The whole high pointing and isolating, this is something we discussed for like over 5 years in terms of like George Kittle, because with the image, I know that comes to your head. I know where you're coming from, because when we saw Gronk on Bobby Wagner in the Super Bowl, isolated one-on-one, and it was like, wow. And then we saw Antonio Gates for many, many years with Phillip Rivers down in San Diego, isolated one-on-one, go run a fade, go run a slant, go get your money, player. Tony Gonzalez. He was probably the start of it, where you saw Tony Gonzalez. I remember a Candlestick game where the Chiefs came into Candlestick Park and they held Tony Gonzalez with one catch at 7 yards. It was Julian Peterson met it up on Tony Gonzalez. But over and over in that football game, they isolated Tony Gonzalez, trips right, Tony Gonzalez on the side to the left by himself, one-on-one. Now if the safety wants to come over, you know, the double team's coming. They're going to bracket him. But, yeah, we've been asking for this for a long time. It's just not Kyle's. Not in Kyle's system.
But I think this is where the evolution needs to come.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
And I would also say that when you have Brock, I trust his decision-making significantly more than prior quarterback versions that they've had. And it's like, I think you need to go in that direction. Who throws a more catchable lob ball than him? It's a low percentage play right. just to begin with, but I also trust him on the quick slants.
Well, Juwan Jennings may become that guy.
He
may become that guy because he's a big body wide receiver, a guy they haven't had in a very long time, but that's something they would do. Now, when it comes to Brandon Ayuk, obviously they wanted to get him involved. Brock Purdy didn't see the double team on the interception. They had Brandon Ayuk early. Brock Purdy didn't pull the trigger on that play. And then Jabril Peppers over the top. So, look, they force fed that one. They force fed that one. That was a bad decision by Brock Purdy. He forced the ball into double coverage there. So, Brandon Ayuk, look, everybody's going to get on him. Now, what we didn't touch on was Shortskate Friday, which is very, very bizarre, very, very strange.
Can I opt out of that conversation?
Why?
Because I just think it's just,
Shortsgate?
Look, it's pretty simple to me.
You don't have an opt-out bill in your contract. Farhan didn't negotiate it, sorry.
Like, it's pretty simple to me. I know we got people calling. Parag didn't. Fired up. Here's my thing. Like, wear the right color shorts. Like, if everyone's wearing one, just wear the right color shorts. I'm not gonna analyze kicking the other pair of shorts. I almost feel like after that win, the last thing I want to do is go back 3 days prior talk about the color of someone's shorts. Over it.
Oh, man. That Brooke Durwiller to Diz, boy. Oh, my gosh. What a field day that was for them. It was like,
I'm opting out.
I was like, wow.
I'm opting out.
I was like, wow.
It's very pretty simple. Just wear the uniform. It's whatever it is, just wear it.
For a second, I thought he was going to get punished, but he didn't. You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMG FM and HD1 San Francisco Odyssey Sports Station. Always live on the free Odyssey app. I will ask Baldy about that tomorrow, though. What's the weirdest thing you see in practice? Have you seen anything like that in practice?
Crack, crack, crack.
And the way he kicked the shorts off, it's like, Brandon, come on, man.
Look, all right, I went to private schools, and you had to wear your sweater and your tie on game day, and there was like certain uniforms you had to wear.
Right.
Like, the uniform is there for a reason. It's pretty simple, and I'm not arguing it. It's just wear what everyone else is wearing.
Keith and Barry out of Georgia. What's up, Keith?
Hopefully
you're fine in Georgia, man. Keith, hopefully you're not a bulldog. That's a tough loss down there in Tuscaloosa, Alabama.
Nah, bro. I'm from Northern California. My dad was stationed at Travis Air Force Base. That's how I became a Niner fan.
Oh, beautiful. Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, Travis right up the road here, about 2 hours away.
Bang, bang, Niner gang. Just want to say we're not dead. This feels like a tough season that's coming versus last year where I thought we were the favorites throughout the year. I thought that was our year. I'm an 80s baby, so I became a Niner fan in 88 through 94. I had a great childhood winning all the Super Bowls. But I think this can be like an Eli Manning type of year, if that makes sense, where like you're 9-7, 11-6, 10-whatever, and then you just get the job done. I have faith in Brock Purdy. Like, I think we're gonna have to pay him and all that, but I think he's the guy for our franchise. And I just think going forward that's what it's gonna be. And I don't know. That's just where I'm at, guys. Yeah. What do you think about that?
Yeah, nah, Keith, you know what? I'm okay with Brock Purdy getting paid. And I don't worry about, you may lose this guy or you may lose that guy. Well, I have Brock Purdy. And I'm stabilizing the most important position in all of North American sport, which is the quarterback position. And I could build around Brock. It's obvious you could build around Brock. Last week we saw it against the Rams team where no Debo, no Kittle. He was just fine. All right, this week he has a full complement of weapons. He's trying to figure out where to get the ball to. He's got so many playmakers. Paying Brock Purdy the money, I don't worry about it anymore. I really don't. You will be able to draft and develop, and guys around the league will say, you know what, I want to go sign up and play with that guy.
We're winning a lot of games. We're throwing up great, you know, points and yards and stats and all those things. New England they just drafted Drake May, number three overall. They're praying to God he's as competent as Brock Purdy. Are they not?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And we'll see. Like, we'll see if he is, right? And, like, so I think you could do a lot worse than this young man. And clearly he's got the right demeanor.
Yeah.
I think he's a winner. You know, staying healthy is the number one thing for him, right? And that's why in a game like yesterday where he's running around, I'm saying, all right, pass protection's got to shore itself up a little better. And also, just a little tiny nitpick is I just want to see him when a play is dead,
right,
just live to see another down. Not all the time, because I do love when he runs around.
Well, yeah.
But there are times where he took a shot to the back, and I'm saying, hey, dude, live to fight another down. It's okay. Look, it's okay.
It's pro football. You're going to get hit,
no,
right?
No, I know.
Josh Allen, Lamar, Joe Burrow, Mahomes, they all extend
the
plays.
But you got to protect yourself.
You do have to protect yourself, and he's getting better. But you're going to get hit from time to time, and you can't do anything about that. Here's Brock Purdy, before we take a break, asked about taking a lot of deep shots yesterday.
I mean, that's the case for every game, is we're ready for if they present a certain coverage, then we have, you know, a shot or an opportunity ready, and we just got to execute and capitalize on them. And so for this game, there was a couple plays where, you know, their safeties were low, and when we had guys going deep with Debo and JJ, so for me, we talked about it on the sideline, and I was sort of aggressive to seeing that and let it rip and trust those guys to get under it and make plays, and that's what they did. So it was nice to be able to connect on, you know, those deeper routes and stuff like that and put that on tape and give us all some confidence moving forward with the deep ball.
You know, there's not a lot. Obviously, there's a lot of sloppiness yesterday against the Patriots, but you get the win. You love Fred Warner. You love the way Bosa got after the quarterback late in the game, and he forced a fumble, which is what we want to see around here. And you didn't hear the secondary's name called much. Patriots are a bad football team. But I got to say, waking up this morning and then watching the game yesterday, it sure is refreshing to know that the team you root for has a quarterback. I mean, it's straight up. I mean, the Niners have a quarterback. We don't have to worry about a quarterback. We don't have to worry about the position anymore.
Watching football yesterday made me realize when you don't have that guy, you're pretty hopeless.
You're hopeless.
And I look at like a Washington Commander fan this morning, and they're saying to themselves, we think we have a guy.
Oh,
and
yeah.
The amount of hope they have is now through the roof.
Craig Hoffman, who does or he works at our sister station out there in D.C., he's texting with him. He goes, the feeling out here in D.C., we've never been this alive. We haven't been this alive in over a decade. They've got a quarterback. But the Niners do, too. And it feels pretty damn good.